Hello and welcome to another edition of the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, and for another week, we get to have a celebratory Chiefs recap show as the Chiefs took care of business at home against the New Orleans Saints. The week after taking care of business in Oakland against the Oakland Raiders, they beat a couple of somewhat similar teams using some of the similar weapons, but also with some of the similar problems. For a Monday morning recap show, I am totally willing to be joyful, to have some optimism about the future of the Chiefs, but I do not want to let off of the gas, and the Chiefs shouldn't either. The Chiefs have not arrived yet as a team, as a top contender in the AFC, as in the NFL as a whole. They have not arrived, but they're on their way. This is another step in the right direction for the Kansas City Chiefs, but it can't stop here. It cannot be the end of the improvement, just as it was last week. Do it again? Yes, they did. Continue to do it. Continue to grow, and I think we're finally going to see the Chiefs develop into an actual contender. We're going to talk about all that and the game right now. Kansas City Chiefs 27, New Orleans Saints 21. Another really nice step in the right direction for the Chiefs here. But I think as soon as they let their foot off the gas, both in the macro and the micro sense, the Chiefs are going to struggle. And that's something that's going to happen in this on the season as a whole. If they begin to get away from what is giving them these improving steps, then the Chiefs will eventually stumble. And in this game, they let their foot off the gas at halftime for a sort of a strange inverse of what we've seen so far this year. And that led to this game becoming much closer than it should have been. At the end of the first half, the Chiefs were in a really good spot. It was 21-7, and it felt like only improvement from there. For how the Chiefs have improved at halftime these last couple of games, and how they've actually been able to kind of put their foot down as much as possible, for that to really be thrown back on them, to lose the second half 14-6, obviously what matters is the game is the score at the end of the fourth quarter, everything combined, but to lose the second half 14-6 against an offense as high-powered as the Saints, that concerns me. Not even giving up 14 points in the second half. If you would have told me the Chiefs were going to give up a touchdown to the Saints in every quarter and nothing else, I would have had a really hard time really crushing the defense for that. But to look and to tell me that the Chiefs would only score 6 points in the second half, on that alone, I think I would have said, well, I think the Chiefs must end up losing this game. Because for as much as the Chiefs have struggled early on, to be going up against this Drew Brees offense that was handled well by the defense in this case, but if I didn't know that the defense was going to perform very well, I would have been unbelievably nervous about a 6-point second half. And I think there are a few reasons that this happened, and I do want to be optimistic. And when as I break through the game, the first half recap is going to be a lot of fun to listen to, I think, because you're going to be reminded of a bunch of things the Chiefs did very, very well. So I want to make sure I can say this confidently. The win is great. The first half was very, very good. There are a lot of things the Chiefs could still be improving on, though, from this game. And that's going to happen with every NFL team and every NFL game. You could go to the Patriots locker room, I'm sure, after any possible game, or go into their film session the next week, and then I have a feeling that Bill Belichick is not focusing on the positives. Now, I know that I'm not coaching the team, that I'm doing a show for us, the fan base, and a lot of times the fan base wants to focus on the positive, but we have to stay critical of the things that need to be criticized and need to be critiqued, because that's the difference that, and I've talked about this 1,000 times, but that's the difference between being a average franchise or a division contender versus being a top-tier franchise and a Super Bowl contender. What we've seen from the Chiefs so far this year, with the whole package, and even understanding that these last 2 weeks have been really good, that the Chiefs, I think their arrow is finally pointing back upwards firmly here, even with that in mind, I think right now we're talking about a divisional contender, watching every snap of these games as closely as possible. I think we're watching a divisional contender, maybe another playoff victory contender, but I don't see this team in the Super Bowl right now as it's currently constructed. If you just started the playoffs today and gave the Chiefs, you know, the wild card spot, which I don't think they would actually be in right now, but I'm not sure about that. But if you just started the playoffs right now and gave the Chiefs a wild card spot, I'd say, okay, maybe they win one game. Maybe. Because they're probably going up against the AFC South again. But I can't see them going beyond that. Now, what I do see from this Chiefs team is if the improvements continue to be made throughout the season, which is really what every regular season is about, you have to keep your head above water as far as staying in the playoff hunt. But you have to, most importantly, you have to be improving every week. So as long as you are in the playoff chase, by the end of it, by the time you get into the playoffs, you are as good of a team as you can possibly be. It's a reason that I'm in no hurry to bring Jamal Charles and Justin Houston back right now. As long as the team keeps their head above water, I want those guys to be as good and as healthy as possible come playoff time. I feel that way about the entire team. Keep your head above water. If you can get a first round bye, if you can even just get home field advantage for a game, that's great. That's worth fighting for. But I want to see the Chiefs as good as possible whenever Week 17 comes to an end. And they've got a lot of room for that still. They have a lot of time for that, which is the good news. The bad news is they have a lot of room for that. Like, I, for example, my biggest concern is I still want to take Andy Reid's third and short play calling sheet and just replace it with a picture of Spencer Ware and a forward pointing arrow. I'm exhausted by Andy Reid's short yardage play calling. I'm exhausted by Andy Reid going away from the workhorse in the second half of a game that they're winning big in, or winning, you know, by a nice margin in. I don't want to see the offense get away from what gave them leads whenever they can actually get leads early. The Chiefs finally got to play with a lead in this game, and they didn't hold on to it very well. All of that to say, as much as I am pleased with the win itself, with beating the Saints, as much as I am pleased with going to 4-2 and having a 3-0 record at home, I'm not devoid of concerns, which I think is totally reasonable. A couple of stats from the game as a whole before we go into the play-by-play. Alex Smith in this game only had to throw 24 passes, which is good news, with 17 for 24, 214 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 85.3 QBR. And B.J. Kissel tweeted out earlier today, if I can find the tweet. According to Pro Football Focus, Alex Smith had a perfect quarterback rating against the Saints blitz, completing 7 for 9 for 120 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's remarkable. And for the second week in a row, that is partially thanks to a very good performance from the offensive line. I very rarely felt like Alex Smith was in serious trouble in this game. And the Saints had no sacks. And the Chiefs only had one. But the Saints never got to Alex Smith for an actual sack in this game. That the offensive line held up very, very well. And not just in pass protection, but also obviously in the running game. Spencer Ware, 17 for 77. Tyreek Hill was actually the next leading rusher, 2 for 23. Jamal Charles had just that one carry stopped at the line of scrimmage, which we'll talk about a little bit later on too. I'm not terribly concerned by that. But Smith staying on his feet the whole day, doing very well under pressure, doing very well against the blitz because of the offensive line and because he just had a really nice game here. So I'm very encouraged by a lot of that. The receiving game was subpar in this entire game. Spencer Ware, 2 for 54, actually led the team in rushing plus his touchdown because it was a 46-yard long touchdown, also the longest reception of the day. Jeremy Maclin, 4 for 40. Tyreek Hill on his touchdown, 1 for 38. 2 for 29 for Chris Conley. Travis Kelce, 2 for 24. The two biggest plays of the day, both in the air, both touchdowns. Spencer Ware was basically a screen, and Tyreek Hill's was actually thrown into the end zone, which was just tremendous. So it's kind of funny to look at Alex Smith's stat line and say, well, how did he get these yards? Two of them were on big plays. One of them purely from his arm into Tyreek Hill's hands. The other one because Spencer Ware made an incredible play with some incredible blocking. But I think you have to be, at least in the first half, very happy with what the offense put out there. In the second half, you start to say, well, it does sort of worry me that Alex Smith had just over 200 yards, that Spencer Ware had just had under 80 yards rushing, that the leading receiver in this case was a running back with 2 catches who had a super long screen for a touchdown, that Jeremy Maclin only ended up with 40 yards in this game, that Travis Kelce was a non-factor, that Chris Conley had a couple of nice plays, but only 29 yards. Against this defense. That concerns me deeply. The offense did their job in the first half. The defense did their job in the whole game. Where this game ultimately wraps up for me as I go into the play-by-play, the defense did their job for 4 quarters. 21 points against the Saints, God bless them. That is more than you can ask for. The offense did their job for the first half. That, in this game, ended up being enough for the victory, but I wouldn't count on that working every single time against the Saints. The home field advantage was actually seen here. The 6 points scored in the second half for the Chiefs was the difference in the margin of victory, but it was a nail-biter at the end a little bit, and the Saints came back much closer than they should have gotten. Defense did their job the whole game, offense did the job the first half. That worked, but that's not enough going forward. Now to the game. Jamal Charles was active for this game, but just got that one carry. Phillip Gaines was not. Stephen Nelson got the start on the outside, and DJ White was listed as the third corner. I tweet this out, I think, every week, and I don't think I've ever really explained why. I would generally prefer to just leave DJ White out to the number two corner spot instead of having Steven Nelson move over there and then have White cover the slot, because you're effectively then downgrading two positions. If you're going to lose Phillip Gaines outside, I would say put your third best corner, DJ White, which is scary that he's your third best corner, but that's the case right now. Put your third best outside guy out there. Third best active outside guy, I should say, because I'm saying Peters is obviously the best. Then it's Steven Nelson, perhaps, and then it's DJ White. Put DJ White out there and leave Steven Nelson at his best position, covering the slot, because that's always going to matter in the NFL right now. Leave Steven Nelson where he's most comfortable and most effective, and then downgrade your number two corner spot from Gaines all the way down to Steven Nelson. I'm sorry, all the way down to DJ White, and then you have to just be willing to deal with that problem. Instead of saying, all right, now we have to deal with Steven Nelson being a weakness outside and deal with DJ White being a weakness in the slot. In this game, Steven Nelson was picked on a lot early. You're going to hear that here in the play-by-play. But that's my logic for why I would leave DJ White out as the guy to replace Phillip Gaines and leave Steven Nelson on the inside. I got some pushback on that on Twitter and some sort of discussion around it. That's my logic behind it. So the first play here, the Chiefs start with the ball. The first play was a zero-yard gain on a pass to Anthony Sherman. That's not really how I like to see games start, generally. Go ahead and just get the ball to a playmaker to set the tone, but whatever, it was fine. They made up for it with the next play. Smith rolled out to his right, passed it back to the line of scrimmage to Travis Kelce, who turned it upfield for a first down. Then later on a second and eight, Spencer Ware got a great lead block from Mitch Morse and took it for 12 yards. First and 10, Ware around the left side for another 12 yards. Then Charkandrick West came into the game for a snap before Jermall Charles. That's when we knew that it seemed like Jermall Charles' workload in this game was going to be very minimal. I didn't even expect it to be this minimal, but it was. Then on second and eight, Smith went deep to Macklin. It was overthrown, but it was a good shot. And I said at the time on Twitter and wrote down, I'll take those deep shots. Third and eight, it happened again. Third and eight, deep to Demetrius Harris, who was adamant that he was interfered with. I don't really think he was going to catch it either way. I'm okay with those deep shots, and here's what I was saying at the time. I'm okay with them because eventually those work. The punt bounced in the end zone after bad coverage, but after that drive, I felt better about the Chiefs' offense than I did before it. Be willing to take those deep shots. They're not going to work every time, but if you're batting 300 on those shots, if one out of every three-ish is working, you are in a very, very good offense. If one out of every five is working, you're scaring your defenses enough. And if you spread that over a game, eventually you have a couple of deep plays that absolutely make the defense respect, not only respect your ability to go deep, but the reality that you can and will. The Chiefs ended up proving that later in this game, validating that mindset, which is very good because I think that means they're more likely to go back to it later on in the season, even as early as next week. I want to see them keep that as a part of their game plan. This shouldn't matter to Andy Reid, but I feel like he does get a little bit scared sometimes of saying, well, if we take four or five deep shots, then the criticism is really going to come in on why are we even trying to go deep if none of those work. And maybe that seeps into his mindset for the next game to say, well, we're not going to try those deep shots anymore. The Chiefs have to keep testing defensive backs. This is an issue across the NFL right now. Everybody seems to have a DJ White or a Steven Nelson, either a journeyman who's not very good or a young guy who isn't ready to be tested deep in the NFL right now. You've got to let your guys test those corners and then give Alex Smith the trust to try to complete it. And eventually, man, those are going to work, and it happened here. Mark Ingram got the ball, had a couple of runs and grabbed the first down. DJ White broke up a pass on first down. Then Steven Nelson got beat for a first down for the Saints. Then on second and five, a run was stopped on a great play from Daniel Sorensen. At this point, I tweeted that Daniel Sorensen was the new Eric Berry, and sort of sarcastically, because if you listen to the show, I think Eric Berry has been slightly overrated for not and overpaid, perhaps, for what he can do on the team. And then my Daniel Sorensen tweet became prophetic. It was amazing. Because Daniel Sorensen had an incredible game here. Third and three, Breeze got to Willie Snead up against Steven Nelson for a first down. And then there's a 17-yard gain again from Breeze to Snead on Nelson. And then another first down right at Steven Nelson. And then on first and goal, Brandon Cooks ran a little wheel route out of the backfield, got matched up with Frank Zombo, and then in a touchdown because it was Brandon Cooks up against Frank Zombo. And they ended up hitting the extra point. So a 7-0 Saints lead right out of the gate there. This was a concern of mine at this time. Andy Reid's Chiefs have historically struggled against elite quarterbacks, and Bob Sutton, in my mind, is very often too slow to adapt. that drive, that opening drive for the Saints, was just built to totally toast Steven Nelson. And it worked. It completely worked. And I hate it. That can't be allowed to happen in games against teams with better defenses or with more consistent offenses. This defense is going to give every offense, I think, a nice little run for their money. But looking ahead to next week, whenever the Chiefs are dealing with going to Indianapolis, I don't think Andrew Luck is going to be very afraid of anything the Chiefs throw at them here if Phillip Gaines isn't active again next week. Bob Sutton has to be ready to throw up everything possible to stop whatever is going up against Steven Nelson or DJ White. Marcus Peters in this game barely got targeted. I remember one specific play whenever he had a completion on him. Beyond that, I didn't see him targeted in this game. I think NFL teams are going to learn from that. I don't expect to see Andrew Luck test Marcus Peters very much. I expect him to test the absolute living daylights out of DJ White and Steven Nelson, if that is in fact who ends up playing on the outside. First down for the Chiefs, went for about 15 yards downfield to Travis Kelce, but the defender batted the ball just over Kelce's hands. The Chiefs ended up on third down, then under pressure, Smith hit Macklin at the sideline, past the first down marker. It was a joyful, joyful moment for me. Then the Saints challenged it, the ruling stood, which was nice. It was very close, but it was a great location for Alex Smith, and a barely enough toe drag for heel drag, if I remember correctly, for Jeremy Maclin. On first and 10, a reverse to Tyreek Hill picked up 18 yards, which was great. Then on the next play, Alex Smith threw a screen to Spencer Ware. It was blocked incredibly well by Jeremy Maclin. Then Ware tossed the defender aside, sprinted past a few more, and took it 46 yards for the touchdown. It was just a tremendous play. Whenever stuff like that happens, it makes all of the miserable screens on the team a little more bearable. And that play was the best thing that Jeremy Maclin did all day. Though at least definitely that series was his best series, with that one catch and then that block. The blocking on the screens in this game was really stupendous. I don't know if the Chiefs saw something in tape when they said, we're going to exploit the Saints in the screen game, or if it was simply a part of the game plan as it is every week, and Kelce and Maclin, along with the rest of the team, but especially Kelce and Maclin, just had an exceptional day dealing with the lining up of the defense and blocked for them extremely well on the day. I don't feel like they ran. I don't have the stats for this. This is me being a bad podcast host. I don't know if they ran more screens than usual. I don't feel like they did. I just think they were more effective than usual, which again could be a sign of good scouting to see that the Saints were going to struggle there, or could be a sign of just really good blocking, really beating the Saints in a man-to-man way, which freed up Spencer Ware to make plays, which is all that Spencer Ware does anymore, is just constantly make plays. So tremendous drive there, 7-7 touchdown, a touchdown making it 7-7, tying the game up here, which was all the Chiefs needed, thankfully, to really get rolling here in this first half. Mark Ingram got run out of bounds by Ramique Wilson, who was just re-signed for a loss of two whenever they got the ball back. Ramique Wilson had a pretty nice game here. He was never a liability that I saw, and he had a couple of nice plays, so hopefully next to Derek Johnson, he can hold up well enough to keep the middle of the defense from really taking a step backwards after the loss of not only Josh Malga, but now Justin March Lillard, both done for the season. After that, the Saints had a little check down to Ingram for 8, but on the play, left tackle Terron Armstead was helped off the field. He was the backup left tackle, so the Saints moved to a third string left tackle, which at the time I thought meant good news for the pass rush of Dee Ford and Tom Bahali. Neither one of them did anything in this game until late. Dee Ford had a play later on that we'll talk about, but beyond that, not much for either of those guys all day. On 3rd and 4, Breeze hit Michael Thomas for a big game, but the offense was offside, so on 3rd and 9, the Chiefs got some pressure, and Breeze got whacked by Derek Johnson, but Breeze hit Snead, beating Steven Nelson for a first down for another, just, it wasn't infuriating, it was just so frustrating to watch Steven Nelson be the target of everything for, you know, at least the whole first quarter. Another false start and a short gain got the Saints to 2nd and 12. Breeze got pressured and threw it away. Then on 3rd and 12, he got pressured by a terrifying Jay Howard. There was a great shot on the replay after that of just Jay Howard just running right into Drew Breeze. It was mortifying. So Jay Howard gets pressure. Breeze throws it to Snead, who gets hit by Eric Berry to break up the pass. The ball gets tipped up. Daniel Sorensen grabs it and took it all the way back for a 48-yard touchdown, a pick six. really just a very, very good pass breakup from Eric Berry, who those are pretty rare for. And so him stepping up there was very timely and a very good play. Happy to give the praise to Eric Berry on that play. Breaks it up, Sorensen pulls it in, takes it back. Stupendous sequence. The extra point is good, and the Chiefs take a 14-7 lead and never give it back here. I couldn't tell at this point in the game if it was Bob Sutton or the defensive line, but the Chiefs were getting pressure on that drive, and in case you missed it, pressure makes Drew Brees less good. And it wasn't the outside linebackers, really, for this game. The defensive line was the one that, whenever Brees was getting pressure, it was usually because of them. And this is a defensive line with no Alan Bailey anymore for the entire season. And Chris Jones was, like, relatively quiet, but the Saints were having to deal with that entire front seven, mostly that entire front three, those three down linemen, and that was giving them trouble. So a really nice day for the defensive line there. Both sides of the trenches for the Chiefs had a really nice day. Moving into the second quarter, it was 3rd-and-2 for the Saints. The Saints converted up against DJ White for 4 yards, and the Saints' backup left guard got hurt. And then on the next play, Daniel Sorensen gets a sack, continuing his wonderful day, the only sack of the day for the Chiefs there. Then on 3rd-and-long, Sorensen gets the tackle, and the Saints punt it out of bounds because they're scared of Tyreek Hill. Chiefs get the ball back. 1st-and-10, Jamaal Charles comes into the game in kind of a weird time. Waiting until the second quarter to bring him in was strange, and then bringing him in at all then was strange, but he comes into the game, gets a carry, gets stretched out to the right sideline for no gain. Then the Chiefs on 2nd down, Smith puts the ball right into a tight window on a slant to Chris Conley, who hauled it in for the 1st down. That was great. And then right after that, Smith had a stupendous play that probably won't get praised enough, but I feel like if you can think back to it at least, or I'll try to explain it, he danced around in the pocket and threw an absolute dart to Travis Kelce off of 1 foot. I think it was off of his right foot, actually. He kept his head up the whole time and just threw it exactly where Kelce needed it. In pressure, dancing around, it was stupendous. Smith will usually, in my mind, tuck his head down and try to run in that situation, which I don't think would have worked there very well, or he would have checked it down somewhere else. But he took a pretty risky throw in a pretty compromising position after standing up. Really a nice play for Alex Smith there. 1st-and-10, Smith gets flushed out. This case, he does run. He slid and got hit pretty late by the Saints defender, but the Saints guy kept his head up. I was fine with a no call on that, though I do think Brees or Tom Brady would have gotten that flag. But the flag thing kept getting worse from that point forward. 2nd-and-7, the play-action reverse fake, handoff to Tyreek Hill, pass to the other side, the D'Anthony Thomas, who got lit up. That was no good. 3rd down, an encroachment penalty on Nick Fairley moved the Chiefs up to 3rd-and-5. Smith couldn't find anyone downfield and scrambled for the 1st down. He got knocked out of bounds. In this case, I do disagree with what the refs ended up doing. Trakendrick West just, like, put his hands on a Saints shoulder and got a personal foul for it. That was annoying. That was the point with the refereeing where I said, I just need some consistency in these situations. If you're going to call that on Trakendrick West with his hand, you know, on a guy's shoulder pad, moving him away from Alex Smith, who got hit late, running out of bounds, that's fine. But you also have to be calling the borderline stuff on the field, on the sidelines, where the Saints just had 2 reasons to throw flags previously. I have no problem with them not throwing flags on the sliding and on the semi-late hit. But if you're not going to call those, you can't call a flag, or can't throw a flag, call a personal foul penalty on Kendrick West for putting his hand on a guy's shoulder. Just have some consistency there. Stick to one of the schools of thought, and then neither team will get screwed. Both teams will just be playing under the same rules. I think the NFL generally leans towards throwing more flags right now, trying to keep games under control. But there were those couple of definitely callable penalties on the Saints earlier. I don't really care which direction it goes in, as long as the referees are consistent. And in that case, they weren't. Ware ended up picking up another 1st down on a beautiful run. And then on 1st-and-10 from the 38, the Chiefs did the Tyreek Hill deep shot thing again. And I was so happy. I've talked about that. I think we've seen that play twice now in the season not work. Every time I've seen it, I think I've tweeted, keep taking those deep shots for Tyreek Hill. He's going to get some separation because he's faster than everybody else. Let him run in a straight line. Let Alex Smith throw the ball in front of where he's going to land. And just try that once or twice every game, and it's going to work. In this case, the 3rd time they tried it this regular season, it did work. It was tremendous. Hill pulled it in with 1 hand. He was totally draped in coverage, and he made a beautiful catch on a beautiful throw. that exact play, that's why those misses early on, those deep misses to Macklin and to Demetrius Harris early on, didn't bother me. You take these shots, and it works in the NFL, even for the Chiefs. Even the Chiefs can make that play work. You do that enough, Smith's going to hit it, Hill's going to bring it in. Smith's going to hit it, Macklin's going to bring it in. Chris Conley can do that, maybe. I don't know if he's fast enough to get the separation that Tyreek Hill did. And the separation that Tyreek Hill got was minimal. He was covered by the defender, but he made a fantastic play falling into the end zone, leaping into the end zone, maybe. I want to see the Chiefs keep committing to that. Also, I saw there was a take and takeaway that I'm going to talk about a little bit later on about Tyreek Hill and the mindset for him for Chiefs fans now that I'm excited to talk about. I'm going to do that whenever we get to the takes and takeaways, because I think I saw several things on Twitter actually right after that big play about Tyreek Hill that I think were very, very off base, and I think it's worth having a discussion about, so that'll happen a little bit later on in the show. MC Reach on Twitter at that point tweeted that the key there wasn't the sick catch, but the concentration and using his right arm to maintain separation. A veteran type play there for Tyreek Hill. And I didn't even consider that the first time, but he did. He went out with one hand, with his left hand to haul it in, kept his right hand back to keep that separation between him and the defender, and then pulled it in with the left hand, secured it with the right, fell into the end zone. It really was a veteran receiver type of play for a guy that has never really played a receiver, and not only in the NFL, but even in college. So that's another touchdown for the Chiefs, making it 21-7, and the Chiefs move back to defense. Ron Parker just about got another interception, breaking up a pass from Breeze. Then a holding penalty moved them back. Then on 3rd and 13, Sorensen stopped Snead in space by himself. A really nice play by him again there. Then the Saints punt it back. Hill fields it and is immediately tackled. I'm surprised he held onto the ball. That was a very dangerous, dangerous play, and something I wish he would have not done there, but he caught it and held onto the ball. Then Smith hit Demetrius Harris for 10 yards. Ware got another first down. O'Shaughnessy jumped off sides. And on 1st and 15, Smith scrambled over to the sidelines and threw it away and got hit really late. And that one should have been a flag. The one earlier on up on the sidelines was minimal. This case, though, he was bent backwards and he was significantly out of bounds. That's another case where I think I would have thrown a flag regardless of what the earlier ones were called. Then it was incomplete on 2nd and 15. 3rd and 15, a messy screen went for 8 yards. The Chiefs punt it back. The Saints punt return man muffed the punt and was down at about the 5-yard line. Breeze hit Fleener wide open downfield for 30, and the Saints kept moving the ball downfield into the 2-minute warning, but a delay of game moved the Saints back. So on 3rd and 10, Breeze missed Thomas deep on an overthrow, and the Saints punted it back down inside the 5. The Chiefs took a couple of knees and got to halftime, winning 21-7. Saints start the half with the ball, ground for a couple of first downs, a Tamihali penalty undid a Dee Ford sack, and, man, the Tamihali thing, I'll get to it, I guess. Jay Howard hit Breeze again, but a pass to Snead got them back into the red zone. 2nd and 3, an Ingram run was completely stopped by the defensive line and Ramique Wilson. Then on 3rd and 5, Breeze had to call a timeout as the play clock was expiring again. Then it got messy, man. Tamba lined up in the neutral zone again. And then DJ White was covering Colby Fleener, and Fleener got called for offensive pass interference in the end zone. Those plays offset. On the extra play, Breeze moved around in the pocket, got Ingram. Ingram got the first down. Then on 1st and goal, Ingram got to the 2. On 2nd down, Breeze to Ingram around the left side. Touchdown Saints, 21-14. And twice on that drive, Tamihali was lined up in the neutral zone. That touchdown there was on Tamihali not keeping his hand back, not lining up like 6 inches too far forward. And he's a veteran. He's been in the league. I feel like he's been in the league for 25 years. I know he hasn't. I know it's been like, what, 2006? 10 years? 2004, maybe? I don't know. It's such a rookie mistake from a veteran, and it's two of them on the same drive, keeping the drive alive twice. Especially there in the red zone, the play was, the Saints were settling for a field goal. That was a 4-point boost for the Saints for no reason. If Tama just lines up back where he's supposed to, Colby Fleener gets called for the offensive pass interference in the end zone. The Saints have to kick a field goal and you move on. Instead, it's 21-14. Chiefs still leading, but that drive just falls to Tamihali. That was just unbelievably confusing and frustrating in that context. So it's 21-14 there. The Saints, fearing Tyreek Hill, kick it to Demetrius Harris, who picked up the ball around the 20-yard line and then got it to the 37. Really nice play from Harris there. Then on 1st and 10 with good field position, it's a quick 8-yard pass to Jeremy Macklin, then a screen to D'Anthony Thomas for 15, then an 11-yard slant to a sliding Jeremy Macklin, a short carry for Ware, followed up by a 1-yard throw to Wilson that went for 4 yards. Then on 3rd and 2... to recap quickly before 3rd and 2. The Chiefs had really good field position, had a lot of nice of those kind of the small chunk plays that I've been talking about forever. Moving the ball really well. Getting into, like, field goal range. Get to 3rd and 2. And then with 3rd and 2, they pitch the ball to Charcandrick West. For some reason. I guess because whenever you have, like, a dynamite power back on 3rd and 2, you've got to just, like, pitch it to your little kind of speedy guy. Everybody knows that. I guess that's conventional wisdom in the Andy Reid household. I hate plays like that so much. Whenever it's third and short, or fourth and short, God forbid, I think there are a couple of ways you can go about it that I understand. If you want to be the Raiders and say fourth and two, all right, they're going to be expecting us to run up the middle. Let's throw a 30-yard pass, and it'll either be a turnover on downs or a touchdown. Let's gamble big. All right, fine. I get that. That's not Andy Reid's style at all. You can cross that off the list. If you want to say, listen, we got to do something a little bit different here. Maybe we do a play-action handoff to Ware, and then have Kelce try to get into some space and toss him a little 2 or 3 yard pass past the linebackers to get the first down that way. Because they'll be committing to the run, to stopping West. I kind of get that. Doing something kind of different, maybe. But to bring in Charcandrick West at all is confusing. Because what's the fear there? What does he do that Spencer Ware hasn't done? He's no bigger of a threat in a short passing game. Spencer Ware has been tremendous. He's certainly not a bigger threat to run straight ahead. In fact, the only thing that he might be a bigger threat in is to get to the edge quickly. If you're going to run the ball on 1st and 10 and you want to try to get a big play, have him run straight to the sideline and then turn it up, maybe. I still would probably give the ball to Spencer Ware in that case. I think right now, Charcandrick West's biggest value is being an okay backup for a really good Spencer Ware. Certainly don't give him the ball on 3rd and 2. Or if you're going to do something funky, just have Spencer Ware in at least. Let him have a play action up the middle. Put Anthony Sherman in front of him. And make the Raiders commit to stopping the run up the middle, and then flip it to, you know, literally anyone with hands past the first down marker. That's fine. Or what I would do is just line up Ware and Sherman and just run it up the middle. Spencer Ware hadn't gotten less than 2 yards, like, all day, and he might have had a couple of instances where he did. But effectively, I'm saying, the Saints are having a really, really hard time stopping Spencer Ware. Either bring Anthony Sherman in those exact situations, or cut Anthony Sherman, because that roster spot can be pretty valuable. Here's what the Chiefs need to decide. I just thought of this, and I'm committing to it right now. Anthony Sherman got the first touch of the game on that short pass for no yards. Don't do that ever again. That needs to stop. That's ridiculous. You have playmakers. He's there to be a lead man, a lead blocker for Spencer Ware most of all. And Charles, whenever he gets back. Don't ever do that again and start off a game. Good Lord. But here's what that roster spot is. Either use Anthony Sherman, who is one of the best at his position, and I like that he's on the team, and I like using him in these contexts. Either use him in those short yardage situations to lead block, or cut him and bring up Darren Reeves. Bring up another running back who can get carries. He's on the practice squad still. Remember him from the preseason? Darren Reeves was very good. Bring him back. Or use Anthony Sherman appropriately. If you want that fourth running back spot to be a playmaker, make it Darren Reeves. If you want him to be a lead blocker for 3rd and 2, make it Anthony Sherman. Anthony Sherman would have even made more sense to come into the game there to help lead block on that pitch to West. So I'm confused about the use of Anthony Sherman. And frankly, the use of Spencer Ware, which is not really how I wanted to feel at this point in the game when he had been so dominant. Anyway, I digress. That play was so bizarre. And if it works, I'm not complaining about it, I guess. Whatever. I did complain about the Dontari Poe touchdown a little bit last week, because if that play doesn't work, I'm losing my freaking mind. I still feel the same way. I loved the Dontari Poe touchdown. I loved watching it. I love that it happened. I love that Dontari Poe was answering questions about how many times they practiced that this week. But if you're at the goal line, or at third and two, and you are going to employ Anthony Sherman, and you do have Spencer Ware, let him try it. And the offensive line have been doing so well in the short yardage game. Just let him do that. Santos comes out and hits a 39-yard field goal. The Chiefs go up 34-14. The Saints link together a couple of nice runs again, but the Chiefs got the Saints to 3rd-and-7. On 3rd-and-7, a short pass to Snead got close, but Eric Berry knocked Snead back short of the marker. That was a nice play, and the Saints end up punting back there. Hill fair catches the pass on the 3-yard line, which was not great, but then Ware picks up 7 on first down and then 8 in the first down after that, being an animal and being very hard to stop as the game goes into the fourth quarter. At this point, Ware only had 9 carries, which felt like more than that and was sort of confusing to me why he didn't have more than that. At this time, I was tweeting, he needs to be absolutely fed in the fourth quarter, and this game ends well. Well, it ended okay as the final score, but the process of it was not great. Smith hit Macklin, slanting across the middle for 13. The pass was a little bit behind Macklin, but he got it. Then Smith hit West out of the backfield for 3, and then nothing to West up the middle. And then on 3rd-and-6, it was a shotgun snap. Smith threw a perfect bullet to Demetrius Harris, and Harris just dropped it. That was very frustrating also. So the Chiefs end up having to punt the ball back. The Saints moved the ball mostly by running, which was weird. They ran the ball pretty well until Breeze went deep to Michael Thomas for 23 yards up against DJ White. Then really nice coverage from Ron Parker broke it up, and the Saints ended up going to 2nd-and-10. And then a super short pass to Mark Ingram was stopped by Ramique Wilson. 3rd-and-8, Breeze had time and found Snead, beating Steven Nelson. If you've heard that sentence several times, it's because I've said it several times. Breeze to Snead, beating Nelson, first down. Then the momentum flipped right back because Ron Parker literally punched the ball out of Ingram's hands as he was trying to fight for a few more yards. Literally a punch. I am not misusing the word literally. He did not figuratively punch the ball out with his helmet or something. He literally made a fist, punched the ball, popped it right out. Marcus Peters got the recovery. Tremendous play by Ron Parker. And even without getting targeted, Marcus Peters found a way to get the ball in his own hands. But Ron Parker, the key of that play, no question. And really, just the replay was so fun to watch. Then back-to-back carries to Ware got the Chiefs to 3rd-and-3. And then they passed it. And there was pressure, so Smith kind of threw it away, sort of towards Ware, which was the worst possible thing to have happened in that situation. Because what should have actually happened, in case you missed this, I didn't say this just now, the Chiefs should have been in eat up the clock mode. I feel like there were about 4 or 5 minutes left in the game at this point. So I'm going to say this again all but more slowly. Back-to-back carry to Spencer Ware got the Chiefs to 3rd-and-3. I believe it was like a 2-yard gain and a 5-yard gain. At that point, averaging 3 yards a carry, it's 3rd-and-3. I would have handed the ball to Spencer Ware and then let him run up the middle and then bleed another 30 seconds off of the clock. That's what I would have done. And either he gets the first down or he doesn't, but you're definitely giving the Saints less time. I also think that gives you the best chance to get the first down at that point. But the Chiefs didn't do that. They threw the ball, it was incomplete, stopped the clock, and they punted it. And then the Saints get the ball back. On 2nd-and-10, Breeze went to Thomas for 21, then to Cooks for 7, then to Cadet for 3, and then to Cooks for 13 up against Marcus Peters. Maybe Peters is only target of the game. Then to Thomas for 5, and then Thomas again for 5 in the air, then run down to the 8-yard line for a 21-yard gain. Then first and goal gets the Saints to the 5. False start on the Saints, moving back to the 10. Second down, pass to Cadet was broken up by D. Ford on a nice play. A little bit touchy. A little, maybe, pass interference-y, but a good breakup by D. Ford. Then on third and goal, Breeze scrambles around forever and eventually finds Brandon Coleman for the touchdown. It's 24-21 at that point. And you've got to just be clawing your eyes out there, thinking this game should have been over already. And it should have been. You would be right. At that point, the Chiefs had scored 3 points in the second half. And that's frustrating. Onside kick for the Saints was tipped out of bounds by Jeremy Maclin on a nice play. First down, handoff to Ware for a loss of three. Second down, a reverse of Tyreek Hill, and there was a penalty, and Hill was knocked out of bounds. It was an unnecessary roughness penalty on Nick Fairley, which really helped that situation for the Chiefs. It was a free first down, which the Chiefs needed, and moved them forward 15 yards. He just slammed, I think, Spencer Ware to the ground after the play for no reason. It was very strange. And the Saints were definitely still in the game at this point because Hill had just run out of bounds. But first down, Wes went for nothing. Then a second down, it was Ware for five. Third and four, Ware for one. Because Andy Reid, even at this point, was saying, we've got to just keep the clock moving. Fourth and three, Santos hits a 41-yard field goal. It squeaks just inside of the upright. The Saints have the ball here, down six. It's first and 10 from the 25. And at this point, I tweeted something like, there's at least a 15% chance that this game ends with Steven Nelson sitting on the ground watching Brandon Cooks just run away from him with the ball for a touchdown. But it didn't end that way, because first and 10 from the 25, the Saints took a delay of game penalty, which was amazing. That coming into the game for your first play, a play that was probably called on the sidelines, they ended up taking a delay of game because the crowd was crazy. Then on first and 15, Breeze went to Sneed for 12, but Sneed could not get out of bounds. They spiked it. Then Breeze hit Thomas, but Thomas couldn't get out of bounds. And the Chiefs got the victory there, 24-21. Before we get to your takes and takeaways this week, I want to tell you about the people that support this show the most, everyone at patreon.com/RTK. If you go to patreon.com/RTK, you can join those list of people who give a little bit of money each month. They say, I'm going to give 5, 10, 20, 20 bucks every month to help support this show, throw it into the virtual tip jar, and I say thank you to them on the show every week. It's a once-a-month commitment, and it signs up for a monthly renewal system, which is what these people have all done, but you don't have to give every month. There's no locking you in. You don't have to sign up for something like 6 months. You can just go over to patreon.com/RTK, say, I want to give this much money to support the show, and you can withdraw it and stop giving that at any time. The $20 group gets you the shout-out and your Twitter giveaway on the show. Plus, if you send me a question during the week, I promise to answer it. It can be about the Chiefs, about the meaning of life, about your own personal relationship issues, literally anything. If you're giving me $20 a month, I will answer your question regardless of what it's about. I have not had anyone give me anything that I refuse to answer yet, so I think I'm going to keep committing to doing that. That's the $20 group. The $10 group still gives you the shout-out, and I'll give the world your Twitter handle if you have it and would like that shared. And the $5 group, I don't think has promised anything on the website, but I have such deep love in my heart for you that I will just add you to the list of name shout-outs on the show because I want to say thank you to you. Like this week, the $5 group, as every week, is Josh Beadle. Thank you, Josh Beadle. $10 group is Christine Roadlander at C. Roadlander on Twitter and Todd Sullivan at Tito Sullivino. Every week, the most fun Twitter handle. $20 group is Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88. Ray Hines at Big Turf Guy. Randy Singh at Randy_Singh_Andy Simpson. And Ty Declare at Ty Declare 44. Thank you so much to those people supporting this show financially every single month. It helps me eat, I guess. I don't know. I'm very, very gracious to everyone who supports the show that way. And if you don't support the show financially, that's totally fine. I'm not sure I would give this show money. But what I would do is subscribe to the show on iTunes, share it with your Chiefs fan friends, anyone who you think needs to hear this show to be able to join into, and not only into the conversation, but to be able to hopefully learn a little bit about not only every Chiefs game, but the organization as a whole, where the Chiefs are going from here. I've gotten some really nice compliments on Twitter over at JB Briscoe. You can support me there by following me, I guess. I don't know. At JB Briscoe. Or on Facebook at facebook.com/RTK show. This is becoming a very long self-promotion segment, and I'm sorry. I've gotten a lot of people, though, the last few weeks on Twitter say some very nice things about being able to give a show that is from a Chiefs fan to Chiefs fans, but that is still critical and objective. I had a Raiders fan listen to the Raiders preview show and tell me that he really enjoyed it because it's even keeled, even though it is definitely Chiefs biased and Chiefs focused, that it's still, you know, balanced and critical where it should be. So I really appreciate that, and I really appreciate all of you who support the show in any of those ways, and I'll stop trying to convince you to give me money now, I guess. Now we get to one of my favorite parts of every week's recap show, your takes and takeaways over on Twitter at JB Briscoe. After each and every game, you can tweet me your hottest takes, some opinions you have about the game, or your takeaways, something you feel like you've learned, something you can look at in the future for the Chiefs, something you've learned about the past or in that game. Use the hashtag RTKTT and at me, at JB Briscoe on Twitter, and go through those right now. What did you learn or take away from this game. From Miles, the game was closer than it should have been. The offense can't let up on the gas in the second half. I could not possibly agree more. It's strange to me that these last several weeks you've been looking at this and saying, you know, this team has to put their foot to the gas earlier on in the game, which is still true. They did that in this game and then really let it off in the second half. That was bizarre to me. So I'm on the same page with you there completely. Keyshawn Brown says, tough offense to play against, good home win. It was. The defense holding them to 21 points, even with the late nail-biting, is absolutely justified. Praise that defense. It was a very good showing at home. From Kevin T. Priester on Twitter, my only concern for the game was, as decimated as the Saints' line was, we didn't run the ball enough, but a good win, I'll take it. Later on, though, he tweeted that actually the offense was pretty balanced. It was pretty, and so he retracted his statement. I don't think you need to do that, Kevin, because although it was numerically pretty balanced, the game wasn't very balanced. The Chiefs got a lead early on. I think that justifies a heavier run-centered balance or run-leaning imbalance later in the game. Keyshawn again. Nelson White were picked on, no sacks. Parker was OMG good with an emoji. I like that. I can't say emojis on the show, though. Smith took deep shots. Peters had a day off. Andy just needs to run the ball. Yeah, if you had to summarize the game in 140 characters, I think that's a pretty good way to do it. From HK Vittinghus, still the official Chiefs badminton player, official rough and the kicker badminton player. Professional badminton player. Great win. I thought the guys really showed some grit, heart, and determination in a well-played but not perfect game. I would agree with you for a lot of those places. In fact, really, I don't know if I have much criticism beyond the play calling in a lot of these cases, so I'm okay to let that slide. From Tony Tone, has Peters garnered Richard Sherman-esque respect to where teams don't even look at his side or any other cornerback you can think of? The Richard Sherman thing is a good comparison. I don't know if he's earned that consistently yet. That's going to be the key here, is the consistency. I don't know if next week if Andrew Luck will bother to pick on Marcus Peters or to test Marcus Peters. I wouldn't. I certainly wouldn't with the other options. I do think part of this has to do with Philip Gaines. I think Philip Gaines also has earned some respect around the league, or does on a week-to-week basis as other teams start scouting him. DJ White and Steven Nelson have earned none of that kind of respect. Whenever those are the options, I think Peters has earned enough of it to say, don't even bother throwing at me. It's going to end poorly for you more often than not. With that in mind, if you have other targets around you that are just, you know, end up looking like burnt toast at the end of the game, if you've got super young DJ White and not particularly experienced Steven Nelson, I don't know why you would bother testing Marcus Peters. He also asks, what's your take on D Ford's season as well as Travis Kelce's? D Ford had a nice game against the Raiders. He had a chance to have a nice game against the Saints with a third string left tackle. He didn't. D Ford is continuing to not impress. He might be improving on some microscopic level, but a lot of it is very, very hard to see if it's there at all. With Justin Houston coming back, I think he's going to move to the third outside pass rusher slot. I think he also will look better as the clear second guy beside Justin Houston. And if he comes into some pass rushing situations when it's him and Tamba and Houston, then I think he could have a chance to make some plays then. But that's not going to happen super frequently. His best play in this game was a sack that Tamba Hali lining up offsides undid, and the pass breakup. That's not enough against an offensive line that had some major injuries on it. Travis Kelce is simply not getting the targets here. I haven't been able to figure out yet if that's because he's not getting the separation he needs to, or if he's just not getting the looks that he would like to have. I'm having a hard time judging Travis Kelce's season. If you're a fantasy owner with Travis Kelce, I would be moving on, or at least lowering your expectations. I don't think I would have invested in him highly this year anyway. I think he's a valuable weapon to the offense, but I think the offense is going to continue to be very diverse with its targets. I don't really think, even though I do think Jeremy Maclin is by far the best receiver on this team still, I don't expect for him to have even multiple games over 100 yards at this point. He might still, but I'm not looking for that. I'm not looking for Travis Kelce to have big games. I'm looking for Maclin to have 3 or 4 first down conversions. I'm looking for Tyreek Hill to have a deep reception and then a little screen that he can break off into something. I'm looking for Albert Wilson to have a play a game. I'm looking for Chris Conley to have a couple of plays a game. I'm not looking for any one of those guys to dominate. If there was a guy I was going to look for that more from, it would be Travis Kelce, though. I still think he's probably this team's biggest matchup problem, maybe with the exception of Tyreek Hill. But beyond that, I don't know why the Chiefs are not leaning to him more often here. Ty declares RTKTT here is two words with periods after each of them. Spencer, period. Where, period. Nice work. From Ray Hines, when that third string tackle came in, I thought it was the dinner bell for D Ford. Guess not. That's exactly, I feel like I just said that and you said it better. Yeah, I expected that. I expected more from D Ford, knowing who he was going up against. Also from Ray, I like the win against an elite quarterback. Still not enough carries for Ware. Andy loves him some Alex, who was okay against another sloppy defense. Alex Smith was better than okay in this game. Alex Smith was very, very good in this game. Against a bad defense, yes, for sure. But he was good. He was objectively good in this game. I would take this version of Alex Smith and last week's version of Alex Smith any week. With that being said, he didn't need to be used in the way he was towards the end of the game. Back from Keyshawn again. Everyone's upset about the passes for Kelce and Macklin, but no one's talking about how well they're blocking. I hope I didn't do that. I think I talked about their blocking early on in the game and stick to that now. They still deserve more targets, in my mind. He also said, do it again? Question mark. Done. Check mark. The Chiefs did it again, but with flaws that I'm upset to see continue to be a thing. They showed some consistency. They took some more steps forward. They did a lot of things very well, while still doing things that should not still be a part of this team's struggles. That annoys me to no end. So yes, they did. I asked for them to do it again this week. They did it again this week, but not in a clean enough way for me to go, all right, they've arrived. It's another step in the right direction, and I'll take that. Michael Dewey said, I love how many no-names made plays against the Saints. Yes, to have guys step up that you don't expect to step up is a big factor in creating an actual contending team. I don't know how many superstars the Chiefs actually have anymore, because Marcus Peters is one, and Spencer Ware, I guess you can rely on every week. Off the top of my head, though, I'm not expecting those superstar games from Macklin or Kelce or Tomba or anyone on the defense. Daniel Sorensen needs to have a big game every once in a while. Ron Parker needs to have a big game. Probably, Ron Parker might be the next most consistent guy that I can think of, actually. The offensive line, quietly having a great day. The Chiefs are going to continue to have those things where quote-unquote no-name guys, lesser-name guys, non-superstar guys have big games every once in a while, and that's going to cover up for instances of, you know, DJ White getting burnt, of Tom Bahali not doing anything, D Ford not doing anything. I'm with Michael on that one. Two things that stood out to Miles again said Ware had zero touches on third and short. I haven't verified that. I'm guessing he found that from a source that I believe in. That's incredible if that's the case. Ware had no touches on third and short. I don't think he was even on the field very often. Harris had more targets than Travis Kelce. That's also that's a symptom of situations more than anything else, but not something that I'd like to see going forward. Last thing, the thing I say for last year is from Thomas Harrell. And he said, so it happened. Tyreek Hill's play has made everyone forget about his troubled past. I don't condone it, but agree with second chances. All right, so let's talk about Tyreek Hill for a second. I saw I have no problem with that tweet. That tweet's fine. But on Twitter, after his big play, there was some chatter about, also, I mean, anything possible with Hill. And I think there's some things we need to understand. If you are someone who is looking at Tyreek Hill on the Chiefs and you can't root for him, you can't bear that he's on the team, you're holding a grudge against the Chiefs front office for bringing him in, that's okay. You can be that person. I'm completely, if having an admitted domestic abuser on your team, and for the record, if anyone doesn't know, Tyreek Hill pleaded guilty in a, I think it was a civil abuse case technically, but a civil domestic abuse case for beating and choking his pregnant girlfriend. That should make you uncomfortable. That phrase should make you uncomfortable. If you find yourself in a place where that is too much for you to root for that guy, to be happy for that guy, even if that dampens your happiness for the Chiefs because he's the one making the plays, feel free. If that is too much for you to sort of wade through, I understand that. I think that the next school of thought, maybe that's, you know, more towards, you know, getting kind of through that more, as if it's something you should get through. I don't really think you should. But the place where I end up right now, at least, is saying, I'm glad that the Chiefs are doing well. if he's the person making the Chiefs do well, I'm happy for that. And that's kind of as far as I feel like I can go with it. I'm glad when Tyreek Hill does well because he's doing well for the team that I want to do well. But even then, he hasn't even... let me skip ahead to the next school of thought. The thing on Twitter that I feel like was killing me the most is the idea that he's paid his price, that he's done everything right since then, and at this point, everybody who was upset at him or upset at the Chiefs should just suck it. Quoting from a specifically mind-boggling tweet. That is utterly beyond me. And I was talking with somebody else, and he said that I would understand rooting for Tyreek Hill more if he were to even come out and publicly condemn domestic abuse, make any sort of stand, similar to what Ray Rice did, make any sort of stand to say, I did this terrible thing, domestic abuse needs to be wiped out of our consciousness, and I am here to grovel. And he didn't do that. Tyreek Hill never did that. I don't know if that's well known or not. He admitted that he did beat and strangle his pregnant girlfriend, but he said that he was like he was hanging out with the wrong crowd, I think was one of the quotes that he used. He didn't even publicly apologize to the girlfriend. And the only thing that Tyreek Hill has done right since then, if you're going to say he's done everything right since then, the only thing he's done right since then is not beat up any more women. That's a really low bar. That's an extremely low bar for an admitted domestic abuser. I don't think you should be at the point of saying, like, hey, man, stop, lay off Tyreek Hill, okay? He's done everything right since his one mistake. He's been a model citizen since then. He hasn't done anything. He hasn't been in anything since then. So his net worth as like model citizen is still a negative. It's still a major negative. And at this point, like, I don't think he would want to have it brought back up into the, like, conversation. I think he would like for his past to go away as quickly as possible, so I don't really expect him to ever change that. I think it's just always going to be something that he did and didn't really apologize for, just kind of admitted to. I mean, if I showed up at your house and knocked on your door and you're like, who's this stranger? And then I was like, hey, it's me from the Rough and the Kicker podcast. She's like, who is this? And I punched you in the face. And then later on, I was like, hey, I did in fact punch that person in the face. I show up at Ty DeClaire's house, and I punched Ty DeClaire in the face. I said, I did in fact punch. I'm sorry. No, I take that back. I can't say that. I can't say I'm sorry for this analogy to work. I punched Ty in the face, and then I come on the next show and say, hey, guys, you might have heard the rumors. I did punch Ty in the face. And now back to the show. Well, wait a second. There's nothing. What did I do right there? I just admitted that it happened. That's not cool. That's not even an apology. I'm just going, hey, man, I just was in the wrong place. I just, you know, my arm moved and hit, you know, towards his face. And I hit him. I know I don't get to be the morality judge here. But I'm going to say this as a fact, and then you can understand that's actually my opinion. And then I'm going to wrap this up. You can root for the Chiefs with Tyreek Hill on the team. You can root for Tyreek Hill. I don't know if I would buy his jersey or whatever, but you can root for him to succeed because he's a Chief. If you want to just root for him to succeed because you want people to succeed or whatever, I guess that's fine. You definitely don't have to perpetually berate Tyreek Hill and the Chiefs. But you also can, if it's just something you cannot get over. That's up to you. But I don't think you can turn Tyreek Hill into the martyr here and say, man, he's served his time, then everything since then. He hasn't served any time. He hasn't done anything. He's just been kind of a net zero. No pluses or minuses since, you know, admitting to his domestic abuse. I don't think he deserves credit for that. I don't want credit for not hitting anyone. I'm just not hitting anyone currently. I'm going to continue to do that, I think. That doesn't need to be praised. His lack of abuse doesn't need to be praised. It doesn't make him a martyr because people keep bringing it up. It's something that he has to live with now. No one's even saying, like, he should be in jail. He should retroactively be jailed. Like, no, it's just something that happened. And for a lot of us, it makes it complicated to root for him and to root for the Chiefs with him on it. And so you're totally beyond rooting for the Chiefs with him on it, I understand. If you're at the point where it says, oh, it makes me kind of feel icky, but I'm rooting for the Chiefs and he's on the team, and I'm never going to forget Tyreek Hill's pre-draft domestic abuse, but I'm also going to, you know, live in the present here. I get that. That's probably where I fall. Makes me feel a little gross. But I'm not completely turning my TV off, and maybe that's my fault. But don't make yourself the defender of Tyreek Hill in the face of, like, an internet that's trying to smear his career. It was his own actions that got him here. And for a lot of people, it makes it hard to root for him. You kind of just got to live with that. So I don't think that Tyreek Hill's, let me get the exact phrase from this week. I don't think that Tyreek's play has made anyone forget about his past, or it shouldn't. It shouldn't make you forget about his past. It shouldn't even necessarily make you forgive his past. His past is always there. I'm also glad that he's making plays for the Chiefs. And I think at a certain point, when you're dealing with a roster of NFL players, I mean, you're dealing with 53 guys, and even maybe through life in general, I'll argue, at least. You've got to have a little bit of cognitive dissonance. You've got to be able to accept on some levels what you can, what you know about someone, and if you can root for them. You got to be able to accept the positives and negatives of people. This is a really, really big negative. The positive of him is that he's on the team that you root for, and he's playing very, very well. This happens a lot. It happens a lot in the NFL. It happens a lot with people. People you either like or want to like do bad things, and you decide, well, does this mean I don't like this person? I can't root for this person? I can't... You have to decide those things individually. But I don't think that people, or at least I, am ever going to forget Tyreek Hill's past. I'm also not saying this pridefully. I'm not super proud of this, but I'm also excited for his present and future on the Chiefs. And that may be hypocritical. And if it is, then I guess I have to live with that, or reconsider that as I go. But I think that's kind of the spectrum that we have to live on whenever it comes to Tyreek Hill being a Chief. That's where I am. That is going to do it for the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm Joshua Briscoe. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. I'd like to know what you think about the show. If you listen, and if this is your first show or you've listened for a bunch of episodes, I'd like to know what you think about anything in particular, if anything stands out to you. I'm curious to know where you stand on Tyreek Hill, if you kind of had to put that into three camps of can't watch it, have some cognitive dissonance, or he's the victim here, in group one, two, or three, whatever that might be. I'd like to hear from you on that, as well as everything else that I've said so far on this show. If you want to talk about the Chiefs and the Saints, if you want to throw around some ideas about the future of this show, other things that I could be building on, other things you want to hear from this podcast as the season rolls forward, I would love to hear from you either on Twitter or on Facebook. As always, thank you for listening. I'll be back later in the week to preview the Chiefs going to the Colts, which is a phrase that never, ever, ever, ever means good things. Sweet, sir, but could you drop the bass? Bye, Mom.